This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest today is Bill O'Reilly, the controversial Fox News host. We invited him to talk with us after we recorded an interview last month with satirist Al Franken about his book Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. O'Reilly was one of the subjects satirized in Franken's book and in our interview with Franken. In fact, as you probably know, Fox News sued Franken over the subtitle of the book, A Fair and Balanced Look at the Right, saying that it violated their copyrighted expression, Fair and Balanced. The judge said the case was wholly without merit. We scheduled our O'Reilly interview to coincide with the publication of his new book, Who's Looking Out for You? O'Reilly's book will be number one on this Sunday's New York Times bestseller list, bumping Al Franken's book from the number one spot to number two. Well, if you heard Bill O'Reilly's show last night, then you know he was not pleased with the questions I asked. Here's what he had to say on the segment he calls the most ridiculous item of the day.
Time now for the most ridiculous item of the day. I had to stop an interview with NPR today because the conversation got completely out of hand. It was supposed to be about my new book, Who's Looking Out for You? I say, supposed to be. On the Radio Factor tomorrow, I'm going to play you some of that interview. It's also posted on BillO'Reilly.com right now, so you can hear what happened. The program is called Fresh Air, and I knew the people were not going to be fair, but I decided to let it play out. That program gave one of the smear merchants running around the country a total pass when it interviewed him. But in my conversation, they were much more aggressive, and I actually enjoyed telling the woman off, and I think you'll enjoy hearing it. If you want to know the ridiculous truth about NPR and Fresh Air, go to Bill O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly, that's my name, .com, BillO'Reilly.com, or listen to the Radio Factor tomorrow. Very interesting. Finally tonight, the mail.
Of course, if you want to hear the complete interview, this is the place to listen. Here it is, the interview I recorded yesterday with Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly, welcome to Fresh Air. As you probably know, Al Franken was on the show and his book came out. Are you sorry you sued him?
I didn't sue him.
Oh, no, Fox sued him, but I assume
well,
you...
I had no control over that at all, and they ran it by me in the beginning, and I said, look, if you can hold this guy accountable, that's fine with me. I'm looking into suing him myself for defamation. And that's all of the input that I had into that. I didn't see the brief. I didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, that's how it went down.
A lot of people have speculated that you convinced Fox to go with this lawsuit. You're saying that's not the way it happened?
That's correct. That's what I'm saying.
So you mentioned that you were thinking of suing Al Franken yourself. Are you still thinking of doing that?
No, because we researched it, and I'd have to show damages to win a lawsuit like that. And since Who's Looking Out for You is the number one book in the country, and my TV program is the number one cable news show in the country, and the Radio Factor's almost on 400 stations, it would be tough for me to show damages. And since I'm a famous person, the threshold is a lot higher than it would be if I were an ordinary citizen. But there's no question it was defamation, and that's what this guy traffics in.
You know, there's this famous confrontation or debate that you had with Al Franken at the Book Expo earlier this year. And I want to read something Franken says about that in his book. He says, I was having fun, not because I enjoy attacking people gratuitously, but because O'Reilly is a bully and he deserved it. On his show, he cuts off anyone who disagrees with him. If they stand up for themselves, he shoots them down. Do you think that that's fair? Do you think it's fair to call you a bully on your show?
Of course not. I mean, but why would anybody take anything that he says seriously? He's a activist who propagandizes and demonizes. And, you know, look, we have an enormous audience that comes in every night to watch the O'Reilly Factor on the Fox News Channel. And if I were what he says I am, I couldn't possibly succeed. All right? People wouldn't sit for it. Americans are fair people, by and large. So what this is just the usual propaganda that he puts out and tries to make money by defaming. And it's a shame, but that's just the way it is. You know, he does it to a lot of other people. And unfortunately, there's a market for that. There are people who enjoy reading and listening to people who attack other people with whom they disagree personally. You know, forget the issues. I mean, let's try to destroy the person. And this kind of defamation is growing in the United States, and it's really damaging to the country.
I want to ask you about one of the famous interviews that you did on your show. This has gotten a lot of This has been mentioned a lot in the press. An excerpt was reprinted in Harper's Magazine. You were interviewing the son of a man who was killed in the World Trade Center attack on September 11th. And he had signed an ad that was critical of the United States. This ad, while condemning the terrorist actions, also criticized the United States for actions it had taken in Baghdad and Vietnam. You invited him to give his point of view on your show, and then you kept telling him to shut up. And I'm wondering, and how much of that is like theater and showmanship? Do you know what I
None.
Mean?
None.
Uh-huh.
None. If you read the transcript of that interview, have you read the transcript
Yes,
of
I
it?
Have. I read the transcript of the excerpt.
Outside of Harper's.
No, I haven't read the complete interview. I read the transcript
well,
that was
should.
In Harper's.
You should get the full transcript, and it's easily available. You'll see that that person came into the show and said that the attack at 9/11 was an, quote-unquote, alleged attack. All right, and then he proceeded to blame President Bush and his father, Bush the Elder, for orchestrating the attack on their own country. Now, once you get into that realm, we were surprised. We thought he was going to be a rational person. It is my duty, all right, to say, can you prove that? Do you have any evidence to demonstrate what you're saying? He had none. So then I aborted the interview. Just as if I were talking to you, Terry, and I were using four-letter words or defaming someone or, you know, acting inappropriately on Fresh Air, you would stop the interview yourself. Now, we chose to run that interview to show how despicable some people can be, and to also show how this kind of a thing gets out of control very easily. Now, Harper's and the left-wing press, you know, would do what they always do. They took it out of context. They didn't print the whole interview to show what the guy's wild allegations were, defamatory allegations, by the way. And all they showed was that I didn't want to hear what he had to say. And it is so irresponsible. And this is what happens all the time. I mean, these hit books, these slander books, smear books, this is what they do. They take an interview that runs, I don't know, 5 minutes, and they'll extrapolate 60 seconds out of it to make you look foolish. Well, anybody can do that. I've been on 7 years at the Fox News Channel, right? We've never had a retractor story. We very rarely tell anybody to shut up. I think it's been done 5 times in 7 years. And the other times that we do it, it's like, oh, shut up. It's a joke, you know, that kind of thing. We get the best guests in the country. The most prestigious people come in here. Condoleezza Rice, Arnold Schwarzenegger last week, Richard Gebhardt last week. So to try to make this thing out to be some kind of circus, which the left-wing press does, is blatantly dishonest and unfair.
My guest is Bill O'Reilly, and he has a new book called Who's Looking Out for You? You are very critical when you think the media is defaming somebody. I want to ask you about a statement you made on your own show. Janet Maslin, who is a former film critic and current book critic for the New York Times, reviewed Al Franken's book when it was published in September. And she repeated in the book Franken's assertions about a couple of things that you said that he said were untrue. And but really, the gist of the article was about his book, not about you. And in after that, on your show, what you said about her is, a New York Times reviewer named Janet Maslin attacked me in print. But Maslin's gleeful libel demonstrates the viciousness that has enveloped the Times. I knew that once I took on the New York Times, the paper's character assassins would take dead aim on me. That is why few journalists will ever criticize the Times. They know the paper will come after them in a very personal way. There is no check on the power of the New York Times. It prints what it wants with impunity. The Times is pushing its far-left secular agenda hard and will use any and all methods to hurt those who stand in its way. The culture war in America is getting bloodier. It will be interesting to see who will ultimately prevail. So you're basically calling her a character assassin who was loosed on you by the Times review of Al Franken's book.
No, it wasn't. It was much more than that. Any book reviewer knows that if you review a nonfiction book, and there is an explosive allegation, a defamatory allegation made by the author, that you don't print it as fact. She did. She didn't call me or ask me for my side of the story. She printed it as fact. She used Al Franken as a primary source. All right. Now, Janet Maslin's been in this business a long time. She knows what a primary source is. All right. She has no idea about his allegations against me or anybody else. She hasn't researched them. And in fact, they're fallacious. So why would she, in the body of a review, all right, reprint his libel as fact? That is blatantly dishonest. It's against every journalistic rule. I reviewed movies myself, and I know Maslin for a long time. And she will basically toe the company line, and did. That was an outrageous violation of journalistic ethics, and I called her on it.
I'm just going to read what she wrote. She wrote, "Note to Bill O'Reilly, the de facto publicist for lies, thanks to Fox News' hapless efforts to block its publication, never say, never said it, or you can't find a transcript where I said it, when a man with 14 researchers is on your trail. In a book that baits its targets with varying degrees of success, Mr. Franken makes a bullseye out of Mr. O'Reilly. First, the prize. He shows how Mr. O'Reilly's erroneous claim that he won a Peabody Award evolved into even bigger fibs once it was challenged." And then she says, "Then the porn, a mortifyingly stilted erotic passage from Mr. O'Reilly's novel, Those Who Trespass, is sent up repeatedly here. Then the political affiliation, a 1994 voter registration form, is dug up, courtesy of NPR, and reprinted to contradict Mr. O'Reilly's 1996 claim that he was not enrolled in a political party." So, I mean, that's basically what she wrote, and you're accusing her of slander and character assassination.
Well, it's not slander, because slander is a spoken word and libel is a written word.
Mm-hmm.
I never said I won a Peabody Award at any time. All right? That's the fact. And I mislabeled a Peabody a poke. My former program, Inside Edition, won a poke award. I called it a Peabody. Twice on The Factor, I corrected that. That was 2.5 years ago. So by saying in her review that I said I won a Peabody, that is an absolute lie. She could have easily found out the truth by making one phone call, refused to do it. Transcripts show that I corrected the record. All I was doing was sticking up for my former program. I had no dog in the fight. Somebody was maligning it, and I said, hey, these guys want a Peabody. I misspoke. It was a poke. Who cares?
Here's my question. You might accuse her, and others might agree or disagree, but you might accuse her of writing an unresearched book review, something that should have been corroborated, but she wasn't. But instead, you're accusing her of character assassination and of basically doing the Times' bidding to go after you because Fox is a critic of the Times. So I'm wondering why you'd say that, since you're opposed to character defamation.
Okay, because it's true and I can prove it. Okay, I just explained to you that I did not say I won any award. She wrote in her review that I said that. That is fallacious.
She was quoting wrong. The Franken's book.
She wasn't quoting anyone. There's no quotes around that, madam. And if you read the article, you'll see there's no quotes around it. She was stating what she believed to be a fact, which isn't a fact. You don't use a defamation book as a primary source. And if you can't tell that this book is full of defamation, not only against me, but a lot of other people, then you can't read. Now, if you want to disagree with me, you go right ahead. But what I said was the absolute truth. The New York Times has accused me of everything you could think of because I criticize their secular editorial position, which bleeds over into the news pages, all right? And, I mean, last time I read a column, I was accused of now being bought by Mel Gibson to defend him. It's absurd. It's ridiculous, all right? They know what they're doing over there. They're sending a message, don't criticize us or we'll try to get you. Isn't it ironic, Terry, that there's been only one other author in the past 10 years who've hit the New York Times bestseller list 3 times with 3 separate books, all right, beside me. Only one, Bob Woodward, okay? I've had 3 number 1 New York Times bestsellers. They have never reviewed one of my books. I don't want them to, all right, because I know that they would hatchet me any way they could within the body of the review, all right? Yet they celebrate the defamation that you're referring to, and Michael Moore's new book, another defamatory thing, you know, another propaganda stuff. And if you want to read that tedious propaganda, that's fine.
I mean,
that's America.
Can I just stop you for one moment? Janet Maslin reviewed the Michael Moore book, and what she said about that.
Standalone review and loved it.
No. What she said is, this is a bumper sticker that doubles as a book. It was not a love it review
at all. No, it was a favorable, read the last paragraph in the review. It was a favorable review. Standalone review, as was the other one. So look, if you don't know what's going on here, then you don't want to know. All right? I'll present facts all day long to back up what I'm saying. And what I'm saying to you is that there is a culture war in this country. All right? And the people who see me as a threat against their position will now try to destroy me any way they can. They can't win the debate. They can't win the ratings. So let's just get him. And that's what's going on.
Okay, I'll read you the last paragraph of her review. Mr. Moore has marshaled all of his impassioned populist bluster to effecting that change. That makes Dude, Where's My Country a bumper sticker that doubles as a book.
You don't think that review is favorable to that book?
My personal reading, not really. There's things she... I'd call it a mixed review. There's things she likes, there's things she doesn't. When you call something a bumper sticker that's doubles as a book,
all right, well, look,
I wouldn't call that a great review.
I'll reread it. But from what I got out of it and everybody else, the more people were ecstatic with that review. In fact, I think they're going to pull some of it to use on their publicity campaign. So I'll reread it. But, you know, it looked to me like she enjoyed that experience right there. Could be wrong.
My guest is Bill O'Reilly. His new book is called Who's Looking Out for You? We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bill O'Reilly of Fox News, and he has a new book called Who's Looking Out for You? A lot of critics say that talk shows on Fox, CNN, and MSNBC, and a lot of radio talk shows as well, are polarizing American politics because it brings on guests from opposing points of view or from extreme points of view, and the point is often to get people to argue or to get people to raise blood pressure, you know. And it's never about finding common ground or reaching some kind of consensus on common ground between people of different points of view. And I'm wondering what you think. If you think that talk shows are polarizing America instead of trying to find some common ground, instead of talking to each other, people are yelling at each other.
Well, nobody yells on my show, and except me. I mean, I'll get a little wild and woolly once in a while if somebody's lying or blatantly distorting what's going on. We have rules of civility that we closely follow. It's an action show. The Factor is a program that pulls no punches. We want people with strong opinions and stated clearly and with passion. It's not my job to formulate policy or bring people together. My job is to expose the truth of any given issue at any given time. And we do it well. We've been doing this for 7 years. We are, I think, the most powerful news program in the country as far as affecting change. And I'll stand by my show. I can't speak for the others. You know, I tune in every now and then to see what the competition does. They do it in varying degrees of success. But our show is a tightly disciplined program. Opinions are based on fact. Opinions are challenged, but it's civil and respectful, generally speaking.
You call your show a no-spin zone, but the show is so much about opinion, yours and those of your guests. How can you call it a no-spin zone?
Well, it's easy, because spin is taking a fact and distorting the fact. Spin has nothing to do with an opinion. All right? And a lot of people don't know what the definition of spin is, but it was created by the Nixon White House way back during the Watergate years, where they would take a fact, something that actually happened, and then turn it around to say it didn't happen or it happened another way. That's spin. An opinion has nothing to do with spin. An opinion is an opinion. An editorial opinion in a newspaper, a news analysis on television. So I understand why there's some confusion there, but a no-spin zone means that if there's a fact, that fact will stand. And if you say, well, he didn't really lie because it's about sex and everybody lies about sex, that's spin. A lie is a lie. Or if you say Saddam Hussein was his own weapon of mass destruction, that's spin. Saddam Hussein had WMDs or he didn't. So we challenge all spin.
In your book, you write, in reality, I'm conservative on some issues, liberal on others, and sane on most. What's a stand that you have that you think would really surprise people?
Well, it depends if you follow the Factor. If you're just looking from the outside in, I mean, I'm against the death penalty. I'm for very strict environmental controls. These are, you know, very progressive causes. I believe that marijuana should be decriminalized, but hard drugs should be prosecuted much more aggressively. So my opinions are based on problem solving. That's what I try to do.
You write in your book, "I bought the weapons of mass destruction argument too quickly and failed to predict how politicized the war would be." Mm-hmm. Have you had any second thoughts about the war or the way the case for war was presented?
Well, certainly the WMD situation is troubling, and all Americans should demand within the next 9 months, before the presidential candidates really swing in, for an explanation of what exactly happened. Americans will accept mistakes if mistakes were made honestly, but it needs to be defined by the Bush administration why the intelligence was faulty. And, you know, there is no spin on that. They have to do it. The other thing is that the war became politicized very quickly, which caught me by surprise. We were right in our analysis that the war would go well in the beginning, but surely the Bush administration underestimated the difficulties in post-war Iraq. And all of those things need to be addressed by the president to the American people directly. He needs to explain what they did right and what they did wrong so that the folks can know exactly what went down in this very, very serious occupation.
Bill O'Reilly will be back in the second half of the show. His new book is called Who's Looking Out for You? I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of the interview I recorded yesterday with Bill O'Reilly, the controversial Fox News Channel host. His new book, Who's Looking Out for You, will be number one on this Sunday's New York Times bestseller list. Bill O'Reilly, were you political as a child? Did you read the newspapers? Did you follow politics at all?
No. I was an athlete. I played four sports. And I, you know, my folks were voters, and there was discussion at the dinner table. I remember the Kennedy-Nixon election in 93. My mother voted for Kennedy because she was a Kennedy. Her maiden name was Drake, but her mother was a Kennedy. And my father voted for Nixon. And there was a lot of spirited discussion. But no, I was not a political person. And in the book, Who's Looking Out for You, I talk a lot about how I was raised and how it shaped my opinions today.
Was Vietnam a divisive issue for you when you were coming of age?
I was in London when it really broke. I was at the University of London when things were going crazy. And I was trying to get a handle on the situation. I didn't buy into the Jerry Rubin radical, crazy situation, but I certainly didn't buy into the LBJ Gulf of Tonkin situation either. It's a very confusing time. I spent a lot of time researching it overseas, and because I wanted to come to a conclusion that was accurate. But the real defining moment was when I came home. In the summer of 1970, a lot of the guys in my neighborhood had come back from Vietnam by that time who didn't go to college, and they just said it was awful, and it was horrible, and that's when I knew that things were off the chart there. When these guys who I had known since I'm 8, 9 years old came back, screwed up beyond belief, and were telling me horror stories, boy, I knew then that this enterprise was not what the United States should be doing.
So what were some of the issues or some of the other issues that politicized you?
I'm not a political guy in the sense that I embrace an ideology. I mean, to this day, I'm an independent thinker. I'm an independent voter. I'm a registered independent. I basically look at the world from the point of view of let's solve the problem. Right. Whatever the problem is, let's find the best solution to it. And if the solution is on the left, I grab it. If it's on the right, I grab it. There are certain fundamental things that this country was founded upon that I respect and don't want changed. That separates me from the secularists who want a complete overhaul of how the country is run. And so I look at it, and it's an interesting way to live, that you look at it from a problem-solving point of view.
When you say a secularist, what do you mean?
Somebody who does not want any mention of spirituality in the public arena. None. And that's what we have with the ACLU, the New York Times, progressive left-wingers who say, you know, take Christmas holiday off the school calendar. Do you know in many school districts across the country, you cannot have the words Christmas holiday on the school calendar because of the ACLU's court challenges, even though Christmas is a federal holiday signed into law by U.S. Grant. Now, this kind of stuff is insane. And this is not the way this country was founded. We are founded on Judeo-Christian philosophy. There is no question about that. And I have a degree in history. I have every letter written between Madison and Jefferson. And I know what I'm talking about. And there's a chapter in Who's Looking Out for You that if you read the chapter, you have to be convinced of what the intent was of the founding fathers. They did not want a secular society. They wanted spirituality in the public discourse. What they did not want was one single religion imposed on the people. And it's clear, and that is the most reaction I've gotten from Who's Looking Out for You. People who read the book say, boy, that is a really thoroughly researched chapter. And that's interesting because, you know, my book is designed to help people to illuminate things, not to attack and hurt and defame. And we're just really pleased that it's hit number one in the New York Times list.
Let me read something you say about religion in your book. You write, what's the downside of going, what if there is no God? Well, so what? If there is no God, I'm dead. It doesn't
That's
matter,
right.
Okay?
I'm dead, right.
I'm looking at it like, what's to lose? What's the problem here? I figured out early on that I was not nearly smart enough to understand the vagaries of the universe, so I threw in with the supreme being. So it sounds like you have two reasons for believing. One is just in case.
Well, that's just...
and the other is that...
That's done humorously. If you read the other five paragraphs ahead of it, it's basically I came to the conclusion that I would believe in a higher being because of nature. Nature always works. Sun goes up, sun goes down. If tide comes in, tide goes out. Storm regeneration. There's no miscommunications, I should say, in nature. Everything man does, everything is screwed up. Everything. All right? Nature, nothing is screwed up. Everything works the way it's supposed to work. Man could not have done anything to create nature. I don't believe in the Big Bang. I don't think an asteroid came down. I don't believe in any of that. I believe that there had to be a higher power to create this kind of a perfect system within nature. Food, water, sun, moon, stars. It just didn't happen. So that's where I arrived at my conclusion. And then I say, and even if I'm wrong, so what? I'm dead. It doesn't matter. But if I'm right, then at least I haven't alienated the deity. You know, I mean, I'm just looking at it from a Jesuit, linear thinking, practical point of view.
Do you think evolution should be taught in the schools?
Sure. Absolutely. You can teach evolution, and then if the parents want, they can teach creationism and, you know, all of that. Students should be exposed to all theories and make up their own mind. That's what education is all about.
You went to a private school. Was it a Catholic school?
Yes. I went to Catholic school for grammar school and high school. And then Marist College used to be a Catholic college. It was secular when I got there. And then I went to Boston University and Harvard, about as secular as it gets.
So how'd you like going to Catholic school? A lot of people complain about the repressive atmosphere.
When I was there, I didn't like it very much. It was 60 kids in the class, and nobody was worried about my self-esteem. They were putting me in the closet and putting me in the dumb row. But what you learn from Catholic school is discipline. You learn manners. You learn to respect other people and authority. You learn to perform. You learn that there is a higher being. You are on earth for a specific purpose. All of those things you don't learn in public schools at this point anyway. So it served me very well to go to private school because I was a wild, unruly youngster. I know that's hard for some of your listeners to picture, but I was. And I believe that if I didn't have that kind of a very strict education, I'd probably be in a penitentiary right now. So, you know, when I went through it, wasn't a lot of fun. Now, I'm glad I did.
In your new book, Who's Looking Out for You, you write a little bit about your parents, and you write, my father and mother certainly provided for me and made damn sure I got educated and was taught the essentials of life. But can I say that my father was always looking out for me? No, I can't. When I was 17, my father and I had a mini brawl. Lamps were broken. My mother was horrified. But it had to happen. The man had to learn that no longer would his son put up with his unreasonable wrath. And my father surrendered. He knew the physical stuff had to stop. What was going on in your house? It sounds
like it wasn't anything that wasn't going on in every other house in the 50s and 60s. It was corporal punishment meted out, sometimes fairly and sometimes not. But back then, we were a totally different society, and my father was a product of his father. His father was a very tough Brooklyn NYPD who, you know, ruled with an iron hand, and my father was a naval officer, and he ruled the same way. And there comes a point where you have to temper that. I have in my book 10 commandments of raising children, and one of the main ones is do not punish your child unnecessarily or use more punitive measures than are necessary. And, you know, hitting someone for misdemeanors was common in the 50s and 60s and still is in many parts of the country. And you shouldn't do that. Children can't absorb that. But I wasn't brutalized by any means, and I wasn't abused. It was just a very tough environment. And there comes a time where you break away from that. And I did.
So how did you put your foot down about that? By
Well, I basically said that, you know, when I was 17, my father and I got in some argument, and he gave me a shot in the arm, and I gave him a shot back. And I said, from now on, this is the way it's going to be. You know, I'm bigger than you now, and I'm 6'4", and, you know, at that point, probably around 210, and he's 6'3", about 2. So, you know, I say, you want to put the gloves on? Let's go. And that's how Irish people settle things sometimes.
How did that change your relationship?
No, it didn't. It didn't change it. I mean, I think my father respected me for drawing the line, you know. I mean, he wasn't happy about it that day, but I always respected my father. I always, I loved my father. He passed away about 16 years ago, and I respected who he was, but I knew that he was a product of an environment that did not emphasize child-rearing skills. And you, this day and age, you really have to be skillful as a parent. You really do.
My guest is Bill O'Reilly. His new book is called Who's Looking Out for You? We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Here's the conclusion of the interview I recorded yesterday with Fox News host Bill O'Reilly. He spoke to us from the facility where he does his show. Now, you switched your political affiliation from Republican to Independent in 2000. You registered Republican in 94.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, the true story about that was I didn't even know I was registered as a Republican. I mean, I thought I was registered as an Independent. And I was stunned when a New York Daily News reporter told me that, and I changed it the next day. And I'll never forget that because the woman was in my office, and she said, "Gee, you know, you're a registered Republican." I said, "No, I'm not." I said, "I'm an Independent registered out there in Long Island." She says, "No, I just called out," and I was stunned. So it was either an oversight on my part because I was never an ideologue. I never wanted to be in a party. I always wanted to make independent decisions. And if you read the No Spin Zone, my book prior to Who's Looking Out for You, you see that the politician that I admired most and still do to this day in my lifetime was Robert Kennedy. So anyway, I was as surprised as anybody. It was my mistake and oversight, and I corrected it.
How did you make the mistake, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it might have been just a rush job. It might have been a myriad of things, but if people want to think that I tried to deceive them, then you go ahead and think that. But I just told you the truth.
Right. Yeah. Al Franken reprints the registration form where the Republican box is checked.
And he also says that I had lavish trips to Florida with my family. You might notice in that defamation tome. We went to Florida one time on the Greyhound bus. And I'm sorry I didn't notice it was lavish. You know, come on. If you don't know, Terry, what this guy did. All right. And I didn't hear your interview with him, but I hope that you were just as tough with him as you're being with me. I hope you scrutinized him just as much as you are with me. I hope NPR is fair and balanced. Anyway, if you don't know what he's doing or trying to do, then I can't help you. And if you're on board with that, then I don't respect you.
You know, I'd actually like to ask you about one other thing pertaining to something we were talking about earlier, which is book reviews. You know, we were talking about that Janet Maslin review of the Al Franken book and the things that you said about her. There was a review, I was just reading a review of your new book in People magazine. Did you see this one?
I see them all.
Yeah. Okay, so the reviewer said, let me get this.
wouldn't you know, I'm having trouble finding it now. Basically, the reviewer said that after he gave your previous book, after he reviewed your previous book, he tuned into your show and heard you ridiculing him.
Right, because he reviewed me, not the book. You know, this is a very, very well known tactic. If you want to read reviews of my book, go to Publishers Weekly or, you know, people who review the book, not me. See, look, it's easy for, and I mean, I've seen all the reviews of my book, and most of them are good. Publishers Weekly is a rave, all right? But the guys who review me, all right, I'm going, why are you doing this? Why? And we had one in the Denver Post the other day. And I was like, no, this guy's reviewing me, not the book. And it's just another example of, look, we don't like him. And I understand if you don't like me. I mean, that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion. But don't take your ire out on my product because you don't like me. I mean, this guy makes no pretense that he can't stand me. He didn't in the first. He didn't in this. So what is that? You know, if it were me, I would recuse myself. If Jesse Jackson writes a book, I'm not going to do a book review on it. I've been very hard on that man. I'm not going to review his book. That's not fair. So if these guys hate me, why would you allow them to review the book? So you want to know about the book, you can read those reviews, but read Publishers Weekly, fair and balanced.
Do you think that it might have a chilling effect on book reviewers to know that if you give them a bad review, you're going to be mocking them on your
show? Depends on the review. Depends on a review. If the guy reviews the book, not me, I'm not going to say anything. Because, you know, they criticize my television show all the time. And you have a perfect right to do that. You know, go ahead and do it. You know, fine. I don't get on the show and go, oh, so-and-so doesn't like The Factor. You know, you don't like The Factor, you don't like The Factor. But once you step out and say, all right, I don't like him, and I'm going to hammer whatever he does because I don't like him, that's just dishonest, and I'm going to call you on it.
I'll read what the People magazine thinks.
Why? Why read it? Why read it?
I guess I want people to hear it.
Why?
Because it.
Why?
You'll hear when I'm done why.
You know, I mean, look, I'm getting the feeling in this interview, all right, that this is just a hatchet job on me, all right? And I don't like it. Now, there's no reason for you to read that People magazine review. If they want to read it, they can go and read it.
No, but this isn't the review of the book. It's the review of how you handled it. And I think
it's okay to ask you to be accountable for the things that you said. Accountable for what? You know, I came on this program to talk about who's looking out for you. And what you have done is thrown every kind of defamation you can in my face. All right, did you do this to Al Franken? Did you? Did you challenge him on what he said?
We had a different interview.
Yeah, a different interview. Okay, fine. Fresh air? Is this what fresh air is? I'll get a transcript of this interview. You want me of the Al Franken interview? You want me to do that and compare
the
two?
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And compare the two.
You're
all right. Why don't
welcome.
You tell your listeners right now? Were you as tough on Al Franken as you are on me?
No.
You were.
I wasn't.
Okay. Why?
Well, Al Franken had written a book of political satire.
Oh, he was satire now, was it? Calling people liars and distorting their faces on the book cover. That's satire now, is it? And my book, Who's Looking Out for You, is designed to help people, to show them how they have to know how to read people in this society to succeed. Yet you're easy on Franken and you challenge me. This is NPR. Okay, I think we all know what this is. I think we all know where you're going with this.
Well,
don't we?
Well, you can think whatever you want to.
I am. I mean, I'm evaluating this interview very closely.
Obviously,
now,
you are.
We've spent now, all right, 50 minutes of me being defending defamation against me in every possible way, while you gave Al Franken a complete pass on his defamatory book. And if you think that's fair, Terry, then you need to get in another business. I'll tell you that right now. And I'll tell your listeners if you have the courage to put this on the air. This is basically an unfair interview designed to try to trap me into saying something that Harper's can use. And you know it, and you should be ashamed of yourself. And that is the end of this interview.
Oh, so you're not even going to give me the chance to ask you a follow-up question. You have to make a speech and then have the last word? you're gone. Okay, I guess that's the answer to that question. He's walked out. Okay, well, my guest has been Bill O'Reilly, and he does have a new book, and that book is called Who's Looking Out for You? And I guess that's it for this interview. That interview was recorded yesterday. I thought I would just read you the paragraph I was trying to read before O'Reilly walked out. It's from a short review of O'Reilly's new book in the Picks and Pan section of the October 6th edition of People magazine. The review was written by Kyle Smith. He wrote, quote, "After I unfavorably reviewed the Fox News Channel star's last book, I turned on the TV to find I was O'Reilly's most ridiculous item of the day. The big guy said on the O'Reilly Factor, 'Review the book, not me.' Then he called me a pinhead. Consistency isn't his best feature," unquote.